I'm Doris, and I am an alcoholic. I'm a lot of other things, too, but I believe in singleness of purpose, you know. Oh, my goodness. Yes, I am nervous, and if I wasn't nervous, that'd mean I'd be medicated, you know. You know what this feels like? It feels like I am bungee jumping, and I've never bungee jumped, but I would feel the same way. So God's going to kick in soon. Oh, gosh. And, you know, when Walt was telling me, and then they told me I was going to be the Sunday morning speaker, And I was thinking, then we're going to have it in the chapel here. So I'll go ahead and apologize if I say some words that might be offensive or something. So please, I'm still, God's still working on me. I mean, you know, it is a journey. Let me tell you, my sobriety date is December 31st, 1988, 27 years, and I am so thankful. Thank y'all. Thank you for keeping the message going, you know, that when I came into the program, you know, there were not many women. I mean, it was like just men, you know. And I remember one man down in Columbus, you know, when I was in that meeting, and he said, and I had this long blonde hair then, and he said, I am so glad to see that this lady is blonde-headed instead of gray-headed, because, you know, he would think, you know, when he left the bar, she was blonde, and when he woke up with her, she was gray-headed. Have y'all been there? Yeah, I think y'all can relate. I think you can, most definitely. I've been going down memory lane since I've been here. I haven't been on this mountain in 40 years. And when I said that, I went, am I that old? Where has time gone? I mean, 40 years? I was 15, 16 years old. Two summers I came up here, a friend of mine, and in fact, this friend introduced me to a lot of things. You know, they had a lot of money. I really didn't realize these people had that kind of money. I just knew they had more than I had, you know, because we were so poor and we couldn't pay attention in my family. I mean, we were poor, bad. Her daddy owned half the town and everything. They have some homes up here at the Monteagle Assembly. So that's where we would spend 4th of July. And then, of course, she went to school up here. It was Swanee Academy at that time, you know, and so I came to prom up here with her. Oh, my gosh, I still remember his name, and I remember her boyfriend's name, too, so that's another story. Anyway, you know, so we did the prom. I remember that night, and I remember getting hammered up here on the mountain with Bacardium rum, and that was my first experience with it. So up there where the cross is, I mean, I remember as we'd go parking up there. So, and I'm a drinking and life. I mean, you know, when I took alcohol that into my system, it was like it just gave color to my world. I was rich, I looked good, and I was smart as they were. And I mean, I just, you know what that feeling is. I'm fitting in now. I'm fitting in. But anyway, we got so hammered, and I got out. There's a lot of lightning bugs up here, and hell, we were catching lightning bugs and just running. I thought, oh, my gosh. And anyway, something happened. She got sick the next night, so I had to end up going with her boyfriend. He took me to the same place. We had fun. I don't think I chased lightning bugs that night, but anyway, I tried to behave. So when I went up there, I told the mountain, I am so sorry I disrespected, you know, the mountain here. It's just like going down memory lane here, you know, so I've come full circle. But never in my wildest dreams did I ever think I'd be giving an AA talk on a Sunday morning in Monteagle, Tennessee. Never. So, you know, no telling where God's going to carry me next, you know. We got a few more places to go, you know. Anyway, let me tell you what happened, what it was like, what it's like today, and I hope I can really tell you what it's like today. you know, more. But, you know, I stayed in treatment a lot, and I stayed drunk a lot, and I stayed high a lot, you know. So I come from an alcoholic family. My father was an alcoholic, so I can totally relate on that end. You know, we couldn't invite people over and all that, but that's how I was raised. My mama cried all the time. She cried trying to fix my daddy. God, she needed Al-Anon so bad, and daddy needed AA, and we needed something. And but anyway, she would cry and play those old records. But my parents finally, they end up divorcing and remarrying. So I got to see my parents get married. They divorced when I was 4, remarried when I was 8, divorced again when I was 12. So do I need to really tell you a whole lot? You know, I mean, it's just total chaos. We didn't know sometimes where we were going to be living at. We didn't know where our next meal sometimes was coming from. I have a brother and sister, and I am the baby. But I promise you, you would not know that. My grandmother petted me, but my mama had my sister as her favorite, and daddy had my brother, you know. So I guess I was the lost child, and sometimes I was the princess of the bunch, you know. And but I did act out the family illness, you know. I did act that out, and we moved around a lot, and you know, going to school, and you know, and talking about this friend of mine, them having more money and everything. I just, you know, but just inside, I just didn't fit in. I didn't fit in. I didn't feel like I did. So I had those feelings of that we all experience sometimes. It's just, you know, and so ashamed of where I come from. And then in school, and with this particular friend, I'll back up, my first drink to my knowledge, well, I remember taking a little drink for a toddy for the body when I was probably around 3 or 4 years old. And I know people say, what? I can't tell you what glass it was in. Is that not amazing? Is that not just? My daddy was going to give me a toddy for the body because I had a cold. You know, I remember that. Don't remember anything else at 3 years old, but I can tell you about that, you know. With Martha, we spent the night at her house, and they had a barn with a bunch of horses in it, and I didn't even know how to ride a horse. But after we broke into her daddy's wine cellar and got some champagne, something else out, you know, I could ride that horse. I could ride that horse. So anyway, here we are going through the town of Amory. And anyway, here we are going through the 2 o'clock in the morning. And can you imagine horses going down the street and stuff? And I just thought, oh my God, this is the best life in the world. And I didn't like boys my age. I liked older, you know, I liked them college guys, you know. They were cute and they had cars. And most of the time they had some liquor, you know. You know, my parents still just a lot of total dysfunction. And eventually, you know, I did not finish high school, went and got the GED. And, you know, I wanted to hurry up and get out of there and, you know, do my own thing, you know, live like I wanted to and all that. And I had no clue about how to make a living, not really. So thank God I was fortunate enough that I did roll into a beauty college over in Aberdeen. And so I got my degree there, and so I was off into the world of hairdressing. Now, hairdressers, either you alcoholics or you pill heads, or you're real religious, you know. And I seem to have gotten into the best beauty shop, but they were real religious. Well, I didn't feel like I fit in there, you know. But I always, now, mind you, and this is Sunday, and I always went to church. Is that not, you know, I just was drawn to going to church and stuff. And but I didn't feel like I fit in a lot of times there, because, you know, when the preacher said, well, if you think it, you might as well have done it. And I'm thinking, well, Lord, I'm thinking a lot of things, you know, thinking a lot of things. And, you know, and during that, growing up around the church and everything, I would run to the altar. I have been saved more than most people have been saved. I have been baptized. I'm damn near waterlogged, you know. I mean, I'm just try to wash it out of me, try to, you know. And then, you know, I went to a church one time where they, you know, Lord, they were all praying over me, and then they were speaking in tongues and asked me, you know, and I was trying to speak in tongues. I couldn't speak in tongues. I you know, so desperate. You try anything for things to just change. Everything changed for me. And anyway, I didn't, you know, that didn't work. I went back drinking. I went back, and, you know, I could go to church, and then, you know, that night, that was the only place that, you know, they would allow us sometimes to go was to the church. But, honey, when that that preacher said amen, we were out the door, and we went and got something to drink, okay? And that went on. So that was my church life. And, yeah, and so I started styling hair, doing real good down in Columbus, met a guy, and I was so nervous. I really liked him, but I would get so nervous, you know, that I would have to go take something, you know, or, you know, take a drink before he picked me up so we could have a social drink, you know. And anyway, it got so bad, and I had a lot of physical problems, you know, cramping so bad. And later we found out why my uterus was divided into two parts. But that's when I discovered pain pills, okay? And then I was doing diet pills because, you know, I got to have this looking good, you know, slim and trim. And so, you know, we'd do those diet pills, you know, and we'd be in that beauty shop, and one customer would be praising Jesus, and the next one would, you know, you got something, you know, and Lord, and I would be smoking them cigarettes and everything, and it's a wonder if I didn't blow myself up, you know, spraying and smoking and solving problems, solving your problems. So, anyway, but y'all, oh, the hangovers were so bad. I don't know, I hurt with a hangover. I mean, it was bad. And I'd prayed this prayer, God, if you'll help me over this one, I'll get the next one on my own. You know, just help me on this one. Help me, help me. So anyway, things were really going bad for me. I couldn't show up on work on time. I couldn't, you know, and I lied, I swear, when the truth would have sound better. And so, you know, I was like losing customers, you know, we did a lot of sets back then, you know, where that meant you rolled the hair and got you under the dryer. I love that part because then I could go and get me something, you know, and I'd run to even a doctor's office and go in there and get something, have it filled by the time she got out, you know. I mean, it was just bam, bam, bam like that. So anyway, life was just, I mean, falling apart at the seams, you know. So anyway, I had some uncles that were in AA, and I think my daddy did drift by AA a few times, you know. So, you know, it was knowledgeable, but it was like for men, you know, that's about all we knew about it. But I remember going home telling Mama, something's got to give here. You know, she said, well, you got that right, you know, because I had five dates in one night and forgot who I was supposed to go to. Crazy. So instead of going and telling, I knew I needed some help very early, and I was around 20 years old. And I did not tell her, come out. I was too ashamed and too embarrassed to say, I'm drinking too much, like she didn't know. And I'm doing too many drugs. I'm dating too many people. I'm spending too much money, and I'm stealing your money. Because they didn't pay me what I was worth. Okay, so. Instead of telling her that, I went and told her that I had a brain tumor. When I would tell this stuff, I didn't think, well, hell, they might check it out. That never crossed my mind. She's going to take me at my words, you know. And I said, and she said, well, how bad? It's bad. It's real bad. And anyway, she said, I said, so I'm going to have to take some time off and, you know, and don't worry about me. My mama's going to take care of me, you know. So anyway, and I remember, you know, going home and mama saw me taking the pills more than the drinking, you know, but, and she had told me, she said, well, if you would just get you, if you want to get high, just get you some alcohol instead of them pills, you know. And I thought, smart mama, you know. But things just kept going, and I said, Mom, I got to do something. And so she agreed then, and so I went off to my first treatment. But at first, and this was in 1980, at first, where do you send a young girl, you know, to treatment? You know, we had Whitfield, which is state hospital, you know. Or, you know, over in Skyline in Tupelo, which was a long time ago, you know, and all you would see is old men drunk who passed out under the tree. And I thought, Lord, I don't want to go there. But anyway, there was this man that was known to be the wino in town. You see, you can be drunk and carry a message if you've had some experience here with some things. And so Mama stopped him and said, because she knew he had been up there at Skyline, and said, you know, where can a women go? Do they even have a place for women? And he said, yeah, over there in Morville. Oh, well, it wasn't Morville at that time. It was at the old rest home, you know, and it was for ladies. And so that was my first introduction. And they got me up there. Mama and Daddy both carried me. And Daddy said, Lord, I'll get some rest now. And how come you hadn't been resting, been worried about me? See, me being a mama now, I know, I get it. But anyway, I stayed there. They interviewed, and then when that night we were all holding hands, I thought, Lord, I done got up in a cult again. You know, I mean, here we go with, you know. Religion didn't work, you know. But it was my first time to be introduced to the program. And I stayed in treatment there 11 weeks. And when I left, I was never, ever, ever going to take another drink. I wasn't going to do no drugs. I wasn't going to do that. I was just going to be praising Jesus all the way. But I remember before I left at the very beginning, I was fighting it every way because, see, there were older women there. And I would ask them, how long have you been? Is this your first time to come here? And some of them would say, no, this is my second. And one said, no, this is my third. And I thought, I'm out. This doesn't work. And I started seeing what I didn't have in common with these people. You know, a lot of them had been married 5 times, 3 times, had a bunch of kids. Kids been taken away. I'd never been married. Of course, I had no children or anything. It was hard for me. And again, I would look at some of these women. They'd come down to my room for me to fix their hair. You know, we're going to be looking good for what? I don't know. But we're going to be looking good. And just, I guess, in case the men's division come over to fix something, you know, we're going to look good. But, and some of them, God bless them, I would look in their scalp, and they had big gashes up there. And I thought, oh, what hairdresser got hold of you? And she said, it was my husband. You know, that just frightened me. And but a lot of them, you know, I would look at them, I was judging the outside, not the inside of a person. And hell, some of them, they didn't have teeth, you know. And I went and told Miss Irene Redman, I said, look, I still got my teeth. These women, they are bad. They're alcoholics, you know. So I was still fighting it. And I told her, I said, look, I think we've made a bad mistake. I think if I'd just get back in church and get saved again, you know, that all this, you know, would be taken care of. And she said, young lady, she said, you don't need to get saved again. You need to get sober, you know. And I thought, bitch, you know, went to my room. Not going to tell me what to do, you know. But they did soften. I did learn. I was, like I said, and you know, when they first talk about this big book, don't you think it's this big old book?
like the Lamb's Book of Life, you know, and that all my sins are written down in it. And I thought, Lord, I hope they don't pull that book out. You hope they don't pull that book out. But anyway, the big book, I did not like the big book because I could not understand the big book. Well, you can't understand it if you don't read it and study it. But anyway, I did what they said after 11 weeks. I was styling hair this time down in back to Columbus. The same lady with my brain tumor and everything, she forgave me and all that. And she hired me back, let me come back. So she needed Al-Anon's, what she needed because her husband. But anyway, stayed there and started going to meetings and doing the deal. Part of the deal. Let me back up, because they said to get a sponsor, use sponsor, go to meetings. Almost a third step. You know, that's about what we had back there. And anyway, I looked around and I wanted to get the best sponsor they had, the one that had the most sobriety and was the toughest and everything. So I asked Miss Jane, which she was a good sponsor. She was. If you used her. But I never picked that phone up and called her. But if you ask me, do you have a sponsor? Yeah, doesn't everybody, you know? And so anyway, I got more off back into some religion, okay? Forgetting really who I am. And so anyway, my aunt wanted me to come up, now that I have cleaned my life up and turned to the Lord, she wanted me to come up and meet this preacher that, oh my gosh, he has such a testimony, and he was just so good, and blah, 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 and he had never been married, and he was rich. Let me throw that in there, okay? I think now, as I look back, they just wanted somebody to take care of me, so they were tired. They were tired up, so somebody better come along and help her out here. So anyway, I went to this church, went to this revival, and Miss Irene Redmond always told me, she says, when two people hook up together, two alcoholics, you know, and he had had a lot of issues with alcohol, but his, you know, AA doesn't have the monopoly on all this, you know. So his was through church, and it worked for him. And far as I know, the man's still sober and all that. But anyway, you know, when we hold hands, we fall in love immediately, you know. But he was sick as I was, too. So anyway, we got married. And so I was a preacher's wife, a Baptist preacher's wife. So anyway, I'm going to save the world now. And you know, they expect a preacher's wife to know how to play a piano. I don't know why, but anyway, they did. So I went and got me some lessons, you know, doing this deal and everything. And so I was up there, my heart was in the right place, you know, at the beginning. It's just I had to have surgery because I had lost a child in this marriage, and the uterus being divided into two parts, it was extremely painful. And so I had to go to Emory University. It was the only place they could do it, and so they rebuilt my uterus, okay? And so anyway, on the way home, we had to stay up there in like a little efficiency apartment or something, but they wouldn't let me travel back and all that. So anyway, but they sent me home with some little bitty pills, and it was called Demerol. I didn't need a car to come home. I was flying all the way and praising Jesus. The Spirit was moving, I promise you. I promise you. And I get back, I'm still taking them pills and stuff, and oh my gosh, this is wonderful. And you know, being a preacher's wife, a lot of people were keying, giving you stuff, like doctors, you know, around the town knew and stuff. So they gave me what I needed, and they knew I had that condition that I milked to death. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, and I got to tell this, it's so embarrassing, but it was me, and it was just about how low things had gotten, you know. And we would go witnessing. That's what Baptists would go and witness at your house. I loved that. I just loved to witness to you, because while he was in there trying to win your soul to Jesus, I was in your bathroom checking out what kind of drugs you had. And I also found some whiskey with them Christians, you know, them good Christian people. But they weren't alcoholics, because it was just a little taken out, I guess, for them little colds they had or something. But I got in a few of those. Make a long story short, that marriage didn't work out. 2 years, that was a trial run, okay? But anyway, before it ended, they had me back in treatment, because I said, I'm going to kill myself, going to do all this. And he didn't know how to handle it. And I'm thinking, well, I thought you drank. I thought you, but he, it was different, you know? And he wasn't going to tolerate that. Now, listen, there's so many women here. I see y'all, and I just love the alcoholic woman. But, you know, a man will not put up with a drunk woman, period. We are not lovely in our cups at all. But a woman will put up with a man more. Happens. So, And so, anyway, I went back to treatment for about two weeks. Then I started catching on real fast. I did the microwave treatment just 2 weeks. 2 weeks, and I knew everything. I had it all memorized. I could talk that talk, but I could not walk that walk. I could not. And so I was the victim. Now, you know, the preacher don't even want me. No, nobody want me. And I stayed on that for a long time. And then my brother and them said, well, I tell you what, where you need to come is to Atlanta, Georgia. That's where you need to come, you know, and get your life straightened out, you know, and get out and, you know, because in Atlanta, where's, there he is. Y'all from Atlanta, I remember. And anyway, it's just a different world out here. And I thought, that's just where I need to go. You know, that's a good place for an alcoholic and addict to go to, you know. And when I got out there, oh, Lord, I darn near killed myself of taking. Because there's a lot of doctors you can work, and there's a lot of liquor stores, and there's always a party. Always a party going on. But things were getting so bad, I couldn't manage to hold the job. I had a job with AT&T. I thought, well, if I can talk, I mean, you know, surely, you know, I can do that. So I did that and did some hair and things. I was, you know, I didn't have insurance, health insurance, so the doctor bills were expensive. And so I had a lot of diamond rings at that time, so I was just hawking them left and right, you know, or borrowing money on them at the pawn shop, doing that little scheme and everything. And so it got so bad that I couldn't pay the money back, and I knew my mama was coming, and she would be mad, because she'd always look at my rings. Have you got that ring I gave you? Yes, Mama. You know, but that time I didn't have it or anything. And, I mean, it's just, God, you know, when you can't sober up and you can't get drunk enough and you can't take and then you just, I said, God, I've had enough of this. I've done tried that A&A. I've done been to treatment. I've done married to preacher. Nothing is working. And I said, I'm going to end it all. I am going to kill myself. And so anyway, I went over to my brother's and I stowed his pistol and just taking a bunch of pills and stuff, you know, because I didn't want it to hurt. And anyway, so I go out somewhere in Georgia, I don't know, of the other side of Conyers over in there, that's where I lived at. And so anyway, I took that gun and I said, you know, I'm gonna make them feel bad for me. All that they have done to me, because they didn't understand. understand me. Nobody understood me. And so, except the ladies at the treatment center, they really understood me. And so anyway, I take the gun and I point it. I had this hand, I remember it very well, pointing it. It was gonna shoot myself in the heart to make it real quick. And I thought about, you know, just blowing my face, and I thought, oh no, that'll mess. I want them to see me when they go by. I want them to see me. So I take that gun and I pull the trigger. And it was like time stopped. The bullet stopped. I can still see it, the fire coming out. And I said, oh God, I changed my mind. And I put my hand up there. And when I put my hand up there, it blew this part of my arm off. And the bullet went in, and I had a jumpsuit on. I don't know, it was not torn or anything. If that wasn't God, I don't know what was. And I went, oh my God, I shot myself. And I just went numb everywhere. Some dumb bud asked me one time, said, what does it feel like to be shot? Let me get my gun, we'll find out. I'll shoot you. So here I am, numb, and walking, and I could see this house at a distance. So I go up there, I'm knocking on the door, and I said, help me, I've been shot. And they said, who shot you? Where the heck? No, I shot myself. What? Why would you do that? Thank God I passed out. So the ambulance, they came and they got me, and I remember asking the little EMT, I said, please don't let me die. He said, we're not going to let you die. And I would go in and out and come back and everything. And so anyway, by the time I got to the hospital, they're doing their deal, and then they give me that charcoal stuff or something to start making me, because I had had a lot of pills in me. So here I am throwing this up, but the pills are kicking in. I'm high as a Georgia pine, let me tell you. My brother comes in mad. Oh my God, he's so mad and embarrassed. And I'm thinking, hell, you don't know these people. Why you being embarrassed about? So he comes in, I'm high, and then, you know, that Southern hospitality kicks in with me, and I'm introducing him to everybody. This is my doctor, and this is my brother. And so anyway, they put me in intensive care to keep an eye on me, and then, of course, they call my mama. My mama comes out there, and oh, God bless her. God bless her. And she's in heaven now, but bless her. She come in a-crying, how could you do this to me? How could you do this? I'm thinking, hell, me? I mean, they got my arm, and now they won't give me no drugs. My ass is hurting. I am dying. In the intensive care, I'm dying, you know. And, I mean, it was just a mess in there. And so eventually I got out, and guess where I went back to? Treatment one more time. And Miss Irene, now let me tell you something. If you keep relapsing going to treatment, they don't really like you very well, and they're going to be very hard on you. But she stood at that door like that and said, have you had enough yet? Each time I was beat down a little bit more, you know. And of course, you know, they took care of me, and in 2 weeks, I've done called on again, and I'm not going to do this again. So guess where I go? Back to Atlanta, Georgia. It's going to be different. I'm going to AA. I'm going to do this deal. I'm like, yeah. And so anyway, I don't know what all happened. But it just had to be God to work it out. I moved back to Podunk, Amory, Mississippi. And anyway, I'm back cutting hair. I'm never going to get married again. That's just not for me, blah, blah, blah. And I had a lot of shame in walking back in that town of being the preacher's wife, the drug, little drug addict, and the little alcoholic and everything. That was, oh, gosh. And some days, you know, it was tough. And then I started taking care of that. I started going to AA. I was not drinking, but I was doing other issues big time. So I ran on that for a while. But here it is, and I thought because in the group I was a member of, it was a lot of elderly people and a lot of good sobriety, too. And I thought, they're too old. They're too old to understand what I'm doing. And but, you know, they say if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, chances are it's a duck. And I was doing a whole lot of waddling. Let me tell you, I was waddling. But I could quote it, and I could talk it, and I could do it, you know, and it, doing my stuff, you know, going to AA and everything. At least Mom and Daddy were off my case. And I was styling hair, went back into the beauty shop, and then my future husband come in. I was, you know, styling his hair, cutting it and everything, and his first wife had passed away with breast cancer. And so I already had a boyfriend, but I was just flirting, cutting your hair and all that. But anyway, that boyfriend did me wrong. So then Donnie comes in, cutting his hair and everything, and make a long story short, I don't know if it was the hose in my head that hooked up with the horns in his head or the horns in his head hooked up with vice versa. We hooked up. And this is probably the most kind and loving thing that I've ever told a human being dealing with me. I said, if you're going to hang with me, we're going to hang together. I said, you need to go to Al-Anon. You really need to know what you're getting into. I mean, he was a big man. Where is Sylvester at? He was just a big man, a little bit bigger than you. Not as quite as tall as Eddie is, but he was a big man, and he worked on the railroad. And anyway, you know, I said, Al-Anon, you know, because you're going to have to be a strong man to deal with me. And I think he thought this way, emotionally, everything. And so anyway, we got married, and he said, where are you going to go on honeymoon? I said, well, of course, Hawaii. Who wouldn't want to go to Hawaii? So here we go to Hawaii, and he's already been doing some little Al-Anon, you know, and got him some buddies and some ladies, and they love him. He loves them. And anyway, I sent him on a mission to go find me a present, a wedding present, you know, and I go find him one. Anyway, I was checking out the doctors on the island, and he, because he had locked up, they had a refrigerator with some alcohol stocked in there, you know, and them little bitty things, but it was there. And he took the key with him, so I had to go. He gonna control me, my drinking and everything. Anyway, I went to this doctor, and I told him, you know, I needed something. So anyway, he just loved the way I talked, and said I sound like Loretta Lynn and Dolly and all of them. And I said, if you'll write that script for a little more, I'll sing for you. I mean, I'll do it. Hell, he just writing. I love the islands. Everybody's so laid back. The birds are laid back. And I wish Donnie would have went on back, you know, and just let me and them stay and have a good time. But anyway, I threw a fit on the island because they were not treating me right and special because, you know, I'm the queen and everything. And anyway, they got me off the island so quick. So anyway, we come home. We're going to do this deal. We're going to be, you know, Mr. and Ms. AA and whatever. And then anyway, you know what happened to me. I broke my foot, and that called for some more chemicals to be used. And and also Donnie was a member of Ducks Unlimited, and I don't know if any of y'all are, but they would have those whiskey in those real pretty bottles, you know. Well, he had them all, you know, in these wherever that thing was. He was just saving them, you know. And the seal had never been broken. Well, later I broke them, and I got in them. And there was some good stuff in there. And so anyway, I called up everybody in AA, especially Henry, and I told them what I thought of them. And I gave them, and I told them if they, no wonder they drank. And just, I mean, oh, Lord. So I had to go make amends to the whole group again, you know, cussing them out. But anyway, things were really getting out of hand, and I mean, it was where I was just passing out. And you know, when I looked at those eggs this morning, I thought, ooh, I've come a long way, you know, because I would pass out and wake up and everything all over my face. And so Donnie said, Doris, you need some help. I told you, you knew what you was getting into when he asked me to marry you. And anyway, here I go, and they're going to try something different this time, okay, instead of alcohol treatment type facility. We're going to send her to Texas. And I thought, well, okay, yeah, Texas is bigger and better. Let's do it. Well, honey, when I got there, it was a Bible-beating place. It was, yes, Lord Jesus. And I thought, what have I got myself into? And I said, I don't think they really understand. You know, so I'm, when I had, it was like prison, really. But when I got an opportunity, you know, to call, I said, y'all got to get me out of here. Got to get me out of here. You know, no, that's what you say every time. I said, no, I'm telling you, I got to get out. Had to wear dresses and, you know, couldn't wear makeup, couldn't do this, couldn't do that. You know, you had to read the Bible. You had to do that. Then they put us out. I remember CJ. She's dead and gone now. I sponsored CJ. She loved me to tell this one. And here I am thinking, I am a Mississippi girl, and y'all want me to go out here and hoe cantaloupes? And they said, yeah, you're going to get out on the farm and work. And I thought, damn, I come off the farm. I've been trying to run from the farm, you know. And so them poor little girls didn't know how to hoe. And I, give me that hoe, and I had a rag tied around my head. Give me that hoe. Man, I was a hoeing and cussing and wanting to get out of there, and I'd see airplanes going over. Oh, God, please. And this was my life. One minute I'd be in Hawaii. The next minute I am in treatment or in a Bible or, you know, it's feast or famine with me. Up or down, up or down. And so this is a little extra information. If somebody happens to go back to treatment, if a hurricane or tornado coming, by law they had to let you go. Thank you Jesus. The hurricane Hugo, I remember it very well. Praise the Lord. I got real spiritual when we were leaving. Thank y'all. Y'all been so good. God bless you. God bless you. Let's get the hell out of here. Let's go. So anyway, I mean, even my husband was a hesitating. Should he come? Should he send me a plane ticket or whatever? Well, they said they would carry y'all up. I said, no, it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad. Put me on a plane. Get me out of here. And there was one seat left. But you know where that plane was going? To New Orleans. And my husband said, I will pick you up there. And I thought, you better be fast, too. So anyway, he did, and they wouldn't let me smoke at that time. And, y'all, I was a heavy smoker. I mean, you know, I'm spraying hairspray, remember, and smoking and solving problems. Whatever. And anyway, he got down there. He got me as soon as I got off the plane. And, you know, he said he could see some change in me, you know, and everything. Oh, okay, yeah, Jesus and all that. And so anyway, we come back, and then I remembered something. I mean, I wasn't using. I was going to AA, and then I remember I had a prescription left, a refill somewhere. I went and I refilled it, and guess what? I'm off to the races again. And then
it went for a few more months, and then I said, nothing was working. I was about to lose him, probably the best thing ever happened to me. And I mean, it was people starting to talk, you know. And I just said, God, I am so sick of living this way. I am so tired of it. I just want to go. Please help me. You know, you have that moment of clarity, and you're just sick and tired of this crazy life. Lying, cheating, stealing, writing bad checks, dodging, the whole deal. And then Donnie called, and people now, when they're calling for treatment centers, you got to wait on a bed. That was never my case. They had a bed. They would go get a bed. They would make a bed, bring your own bed. Yes, we'll take her. We'll take her. We'll take her. So I never had to wait on it. It was just always open. And I was always hoping it wouldn't be. And they said yes to bring her. And thank God, if Donnie did not have insurance, I would not have been able to go into this facility. So I'm very grateful for insurance. Thank you, Blue Cross Blue Shield. And so I went in. But, honey, when I packed clothes this time, I packed them for 6 months. I did not care how long I was going to stay. I was sick and tired of it. I had good support system. And that I had never really had before, you know. And that was the craziest thing with my family. They would see me like that, but then after I sobered up, and then they wanted to go take a drink, it was all right if I take a drink with them. Yeah, I mean, now how crazy is that? But that's the family illness, you know. And but anyway, I stayed there, and like I said, they don't like you after you have been to treatment several times, you know. They ripped me from one end of Tupelo on the hill up there to the other end. And I just thought, Lord God, I mean, they need to get off of me here just a little bit. You know, I'm going to do this deal. Well, they didn't know. Nobody, my track record didn't look too good. And they said, girl, you're going to have to change everything about you, everything. And I thought, well, I'm bad. I ain't bad as Joe Blow over there, you know, and stuff. So they said, get you a sponsor, call them, get with them, and start working these steps. So anyway, I did. I got me one, and I started calling, and I started doing it. So Donnie and I, we hit the roads. We had our cassette tapes of speakers. We had our cigarettes, and we had people in the back, about like y'all two here, and we were going everywhere, anywhere. Just that was our life. I mean, it just turned into that. And then I had a year on me, and this necklace that I wear, especially when I speak, my husband gave it to me. And it's 1890, and that was as close to my, well, not the 18 part, but the 1988, but 1990 was the closest that they could get in their coin collection that they could give me. And that's what we used to give in Aberdeen instead of chips or a medallion. We didn't have medallions back then. We had silver dollars. So anyway, and I remember one time in church later, you know, and I started giving them to my girls too. You know, 1 year sobriety, you'd get, you know, your silver dollar. And I remember in church, I was young, still young, and I turned around, and I see a lot of ladies with these on. That's my sisters. And so anyway, I went back and I said, how long you been sober? And she said, oh, 1918, you know, or what? And I'm thinking, she's not my sister. She's not one of us. She's not one of us. So, I mean, this just means the world to me, the world to me. But that night I found out everybody had a silver dollar because it had never happened before. But anyway, here we are, and I'm going to aftercare, and aftercare was so, so important for me to go. It's just a little bit more insurance, a little bit more, but I need to find out what was really going on, because, you know, they say that 15% is only alcohol, 85, something's wrong with me, you know. So anyway, we started going, and
then I came up pregnant. We're going to have a recovery baby. That's what we had going. We're going to have a recovery baby. So here we got our baby, and we pass him around at meetings and stuff and everything. And, you know, we're just, you know, spirits moving again, different spirit moving. And anyway, so I'm working the steps to the best of my ability with my sponsor, and really trying to get down to the causes and the conditions, you know, of, you know, this thinking of mine and this crazy action that I take, even when I'm not drinking, you know. And so we're doing the deal, have the baby, keep doing the deal. And it was about 2 months after I had him, life changed again. And I got real manic. I'm going to tell you, I have done some cocaine before, but my body never felt, and I had no drug in me at all. Hadn't had a drug in 2 years. And so then I get on this spiritual, I mean, I am hand in hand with the spirit of the universe, Jesus, God, Muhammad, everybody. Oh, Moses, I think he was in there too. I mean, it was just, you know, I'd never experienced that. So my husband says, something wrong with her, you know. So anyway, he gets on the phone, scares him to death. And see, I would not take any of the medicine that they give for baby blues. I wouldn't, because I'm clean. We're not going to mess with any of that again. So I wouldn't take it. I kept getting higher and higher, and then I become, I think every defect that I ever even thought of was coming out of me. And that perfection. Oh my God, I was outside washing the house off because it was spider webs, and I didn't want it to hurt the baby and everything. And I'd take good care of my baby and all. And y'all, I could go on and tell y'all, just going into that was, to even talk about it, it's pretty frightening. But some of the things I experienced, but I do remember them, because it's like the real Doris stepped out and watched this crazy person take over. And I had no drugs in me, no alcohol or anything. So Donnie gets my old counselor on the phone, and in Tupelo at the time at Behavioral Health, we had the treatment center was on the top floor, and the bottom floor was psychiatric, okay? So anyway, she said, well, get her over here, you know. And I don't know, the big book, I was trying to read the big book to him, and it's just crazy stuff. And I was trying to tell him he really needed to take a good 4-step. And he said, yeah, maybe so. maybe I do. So she's talking to me on the phone, and I said, my body is, something's changing, my whole body. I could feel joints moving, just separate. It was the weirdest, oh, God, y'all, it's something I don't ever want to walk back through, ever. And I said, something's bad wrong. And I said, but I think it's really Donnie. I think something's wrong. See, my mind was going in and out into reality, to whatever, wherever I was at. And anyway, she said, well, bring him over here. And they were tricking me, said, bring him over here. I feel like Max in the big book, you know. He gonna carry his wife and everything. And same thing happened to me when those doors shut and I was on the other side and Donnie was gone. And I mean, I went to raise immortal. You, y'all can read my lips, can't you? And it took 7 men to hold me down to give me Thorazine, you know, the shuffle drug, and I was shuffling then. And I stayed there for 25 days, and they would bring the baby to me and Donnie, and then they even had talked, if things didn't change with me, that we'd probably send her down to Whitfield, to the mental home, and just leave her there. Well, you know, some of the other drugs, they had me on lithium because they was trying to diagnose me as bipolar, and because they didn't know what else to do. But this was during around the time that Andrea Gates murdered her 5 babies because postpartum depression. Y'all, this stuff is so serious. So when someone's having a baby, I'm going, oh, Lord, you know. And if anybody's pregnant in here, I'm sorry, I don't want to scare you, you know. But, you know, the life I lived and the drugs I did up to this point, it could have just all, it was just the perfect storm, I guess, and it all exploded. And anyway, they would bring him, and then I still went to aftercare, so don't tell me you can't go somewhere. I'm loony as loony can be, and I went to aftercare, and we had AA meetings on top floor, and then I'd come back down on the bottom floor. So I was ending up, you know, I don't know if y'all been that in treatment with aftercare, but they'll designate somebody to be the chairperson of that group with a clipboard, you know. I really found out they give it to the sickest one after they still allowed me to be the chairperson. Now, I'm the chairperson, and I get through chairing the meeting, then I'm going back to psychiatric unit. Okay, but I guess it worked, you know, so I did that. And then I had to stay on lithium for about a year, and they say a lot of people don't come off lithium. So after, they just didn't know what to call it, you know, that it could have been baby blues, and it could have been just, so when you talk about severe, severe, severe depression, I've been there. They did lock me up into the padded cell and everything, and y'all, I was so confused, and I thought that I was just waiting on Jesus to come get me and stuff. I mean, all the religion just really come down on me, and my sister works at the mental home now, and she's finding that, but see, by me going through that and her knowing that and stuff, she can help these people now. Isn't that just fascinating? I'm helping my sister and her, you know. But she remembers, and as I talk to her and I tell her, you know, how scared I was. I was really scared. My body's doing something else. My mind, oh, God. But anyway, eventually they started letting me, somebody just before I got out, they asked me to cut their hair, but you had to get permission from the doctor, the psychiatrist, you know. If you want a pillow, he's got to have a script for that, if you want anything. And then he was in my room, and he's one of us too, by the way, and I said, can I cut so-and-so's hair? And he said, are you a hairdresser? I said, well, of course I am. And I was just put off by that he didn't know who I was. So I go and talk with Miss Pat, my counselor, on the top floor. I said, can you believe that Living Cotton didn't know who I was and he didn't know I was a hairdresser? She said, well, Doris, just 3 days ago, or when you come in here, you were God. Give him a break. Give him a break. So, anyway, I kept going to the psychiatrist. I'm still sober, drug-free, and I keep going to AA, keep going to my sponsor, keep doing the deal, and start sponsoring girls, and, you know, go, and slowly in a year, I was off the medicine. Okay, and I believe it's because I got in this book and I hung with the winners and I started doing the deal and I started learning to find a God of my understanding, really finding it instead of giving lip service to this thing, you know. So I had to get a new concept of God, and this is so, so important. And the longer that I stay sober, the more I realize I don't know much at all. But the concept that I had of God was in the Sunday school. You know, he loved the children, and he's a sweet God. And I just love that. And then he become the parent God. God is not my parent. God is my creator. And I know that today. And I know that God is good, he's loving, and you know our traditions say that he is a loving God, so I don't tell people what, I just point them, I say, you know, well, you can borrow mine, you know, till you get yours, but mine is loving, and He is so forgiving. But I see God, and I started seeing and experiencing God through you people. Because you see, God lives in me. He was the very last place that I looked. And the big book says on page 55, He will be the last place, and He is inside. So He is inside you. He's inside you. And in another term is, you know, a group of drunks. You know, He is in. And so I have listened to y'all of your experience with God, you know, and you know, I still love the church. I still love all that. And you know, and those people, some of the best people in the world, they are. And I just take what I need and leave the rest now, you know. And but with my walk, it changes constantly, and God just shows Himself in just so many different ways now to me. And I never, ever, ever experienced it back in the churches. I did not get that. And I know they were probably telling me that, but I had to come in here and get it. You know, I had to have me some steps to get it, like ABC, 1, 2, 3, you know, because I'm a slow learner. I need to get on a little short bus. I love the little short buses, you know, because you can get on a little short bus and you can just hang out, you know, with Christmas lights and pictures and stuff. Nobody expects nothing. So some days I want to get on the short bus and ride around. You know, and used to when we would travel back and forth, you know, going to meetings and stuff, oh my God, I had the best time. And, you know, recovery is just fun now to me. Being sober, being aware, oh my gosh, I just have the best time, you know. And I think if you don't have a sense of humor, you need to get one real quick, you know. And but the biggest thing, biggest resentment I had was toward myself. And, you know, I had to forgive myself. And I just thought, if I can't, you know, someone said, if you can't forgive, well, I said, if I can't forgive myself, how can God forgive me? And, you know, that was a real hard thing, is to forgive myself for all the things that had gone on, that I had harmed people. You know, I'm trying not to harm anybody today. I really want to just live and let live, and I want to stay out of treatment. God, no, I ever want to stay out of treatment. Someone said one time, Darsh, ma'am, you can run your own treatment center, couldn't you? I said, yes, I could. Yes, I could, because I have two tubs of AA tapes, and they're cassettes, and I keep saying that because we got CDs now. And anyway, but I still have my little cassette player, you know. But I had to really just saturate myself with AA. I had to listen at night. I'd go to bed with the tapes just to play in, and I would be reading. And, you know, I always hated those people that would have duct tape on their big book, you know, and stuff like that, you know, and everything. Just hated it. And I thought, who do they think they are, you know? And so I carry it. It's just, I'm just like, I started studying the thing. It's amazing what is in here. It is amazing. And I, too, am a Joe and Charlie fan, big time, big time. And I got their books, too, you know. I don't want to run out of time. How am I doing back there with time? Okay, I got five. All right, you know. See, I stay in treatment so much, you know. That I haven't told you, let me try to get to this point, because there's so much has happened in my life, it's so hard to tell it all. Maybe I should have started Friday when I got here, and I'd have been through by the time we get. But, you know, Donnie and I are doing the deal and everything, and then, you know, I'm like 15, 16 years, you know, at this one AA home group. I'm a big believer, get your home group, stay there so the people can get to know you. Don't be jumping around, you know. So anyway, like I said, Donnie worked for Burlington Northern Santa Fe. He was a supervisor, and he had put in, because they were just wearing him out in Amory, because if the train derailed, he had to go, and he went without a lot of sleep. And stuff, and Donnie in the Al-Anon, he did cross over. He came on into AA. I had never seen him drunk. I heard him a little tipsy one time before we married. But he started getting honest about his drinking. He used to, on the railroad, the requirement was if you didn't have a fifth, you didn't get on the train. You know what I'm saying? It's not that way today. But anyway, he came over, so Donnie had basically a year on me, you know. Anyway, I told him that wasn't fair because I introduced him to the program. Give me a little credit. Yeah, right, you need it. But anyway, he put in for a transfer, and we went to Memphis, Tennessee. Here we come. I love Memphis. So anyway, we moved to Olive Branch because he worked down on Shelby Drive. Y'all know where it is, you know, down at the yard. Anyway, he did that, and life was good. We got an AA, you know, and I had all the AA people even coming up to see me because everybody wanted to come, you know, to see me and go to a few meetings. And then I noticed a lot of earth people, I call them, started coming to see me. That was their excuse to tell everybody in Amory, you know, we're going to see Doris. And they went on down to Tunica. That's okay. I saw them, and they were leaving soon. So anyway, we stayed there. It was going on, you know, 2 years. My son was in school. Life was, I'm telling y'all, it couldn't have gotten any better, okay? And then March the 9th, it was 2005, I was in the dentist's office, and my phone kept ringing. I kept wondering, why? What's going on? So anyway, you know, when I got out in the car, I answered it. And they said, Doris, where are you at? And I thought they wanted to go shopping, some of my friends, you know. I noticed Donnie's boss man had called. And I thought, what's going on? So when I get to the house, when I call him back, and he said, Doris, where are you at? I said, well, I'm at the dentist's office. I'm leaving now. I'm on my way to the house. He said, all right, I'll meet you there. I said, what's wrong? I knew something was bad wrong. I really thought that the train had ran over Donnie and cut his leg off. I figured, well, we can deal with that. We can just get him a peg leg, or we can just, you know. And I got there, phone was ringing. I thought, something is so bad wrong, you know. And they come in. Then when the preacher comes in, you know something's bad wrong. And I said, where is Donnie? And they said, he has had a heart attack. I said, well, why are we here? Let's go to the hospital. Let's go. And they said, no, Doris, he is dead. Y'all, I just fell to my knees. And I said, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. The little old preacher was over there praying his little prayer. I was praying our prayer. And awesome responsibility. It fell on me at the hospital when I picked that little boy, John Blake, as a parent. But everything just, it was so heavy. It was so heavy. I just, God, what do I do? AA people started showing up and calling, my brother and sister coming, and it was just like, So anyway, you know, I call my sponsor, we talk, and then I have to make that long trip. My sister stays with me. Let me back up a little bit. The principal, they brought my son home, and I had to tell him that he's dead, he had died. And I just, if anybody was going to die first, I just knew it would be me, not him. So anyway, I said, okay, God, I don't know what you got in store now. But it was a humbling funeral. It was beautiful funeral, and it was beautiful people that came. And Walt, you know, I'm gonna talk about you a little bit. Walt came up to me and he said, you know, this is probably going to be the meanest and cruelest thing that you probably have ever heard, or you might think, but get your butt to a meeting. I said, can I bury him? Yeah, get to a meeting. And I did. I did. I didn't know what else to do. Now I've got this 14-year-old kid that I am totally responsible for. And he's a lot like me, a lot like his daddy. And anyway, I didn't make fast decisions. I thought I was going to stay there. But I kept praying. I kept going. Then it just dawned on me, he's about to get his driving license. You better go back home where everybody can tell on him. I had a very nice, large house in Memphis at the time. And, you know, they don't move very fast, you know, when you throw them up for sale. Mine sold in 2 weeks. It was a God thing. So we loaded up, and here we go, coming back to Amory. And anyway, it has been a journey, but I have been so in AA. I mean, I am really in AA more. And I have dove over into Al-Anon, trying to raise a child, you know. And I'll never forget, I went out to the cemetery one day, and I was sitting there. I was just frustrated because, you see, Donnie was a big duck hunter, and John Blake's a duck hunter, and he wanted me to turn him loose at 15 years old with a shotgun out in the wild, you know, because we owned some swamp land up there with big alligators, big things going to eat my baby. And anyway, he wanted to go by himself. No, you're not going by yourself. So I've been duck hunting, by the way, y'all. And I had to take some earrings off, but I went duck hunting. And I said, how long is this going to take, you know? And so anyway, I could tell you some other stories about Duck Dynasty, but anyway, God allowed all that. But anyway. I was at the cemetery just crying because I was so like, God, please. And then, you know, I'd go to the cemetery and cry, why'd you leave me? You know, God, why'd you take him? And I don't know what to do, and I need some help. And I had the radio on that day. God speaks through radios. He says, are you having trouble with your child? Yeah, I am. It says call 1-800, and I did. I called them. You see, I had to get new tools, a new way of parenting. Now I'm single, so I had to have some more help. I have signed up for every program that they've got for everything, okay? So I identify with most people on stuff. So anyway, they flew me up there, I think about 3-4 years ago to Maine, Portland, Maine is where they have their headquarters, you know, for this new parenting thing. And I can't think of it right now, Empowering Parent program that they have, and it is fantastic, and the man is one of us that it's so AA, you know, to a lot. But anyway, they flew me up there, and I asked them why they fly me up there, and they said because I was the only one that had called every day, twice, three times a day. I used them like a sponsor, too. You know, and when my sponsor would get tired, I'd call them. See, I was paying them, so they listened to me. But they flew me up there and treated me like a queen. And I'm telling you, I had my own chauffeur and stuff. I'm telling you. And his name was Tony. And we'd get out when I was going to catch the plane. We stop up here at Holly Springs. And in one of those limos that you can't get out of the door, you know, that your chauffeur has to let you out. And I had my sunshades on, and I look like Hollywood up here in Holly Springs, Mississippi, you know. And all those people were just looking like, who is she? Who is she? And I'm thinking, yeah, I've been working my program. They're going to fly me up there, you know. But anyway, I still go to meetings. I am a member of the Stepsisters. Don't you love that name? Stepsisters. We meet on Thursday at 5:30. So if you're ever in that area, please come by. I think the main name of the group is called the Sunrisers. Well, I don't want to give the wrong impression of the S-U-N, but it's S-O-N. The S-U-N, because I am not an early riser, okay? As y'all know now, you know, it takes me a while to get to sleep, you know. And anyway, thank you, Lisa, for putting up with me too this weekend. It has been a beautiful weekend. It really has. And I am so glad now that this is over with that y'all have asked me to come and speak. But I will, if I ever come back up here, I'm going to bring some mufflers, because that road going up and down there, nobody has mufflers up here. Am I the only one that heard all that traffic and the police and stuff? But thank God I got sleep last night. I got a lot of sleep last night. I love y'all, and I appreciate y'all, and I hope I meet some of y'all as we drudge the road to happy destiny. Thank y'all. Thank you.